Hour number two, Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game on this Tuesday. He's Big Joe Dubin. I'm Chase McCabe, Dr. Crane, Nick Frazier on the ones and twos. Hope you're having a great start to your day. So with this next subject, I just hear Homer Simpson in my head going, because you've got a gambling problem.
We shouldn't laugh.
I know we shouldn't.
All right.
But we John Mateer, who is the Oklahoma quarterback. He was at Washington State and transferred in this year. There are now some gambling allegations against him because screenshots surfaced of his Venmo account and putting money into a betting account.
Yes.
And basically now there's the did he bet on college football, which could be a really big problem for Oklahoma this year because he just transferred in and he's their quarterback.
Oh, all right. This happened when he was at Washington State, correct?
Yeah. And actually, the pictures show Mateer paying someone in 2002 with the description of the transaction being sports gambling and sports gambling UCLA versus USC. The 22 season marked Mateer's first year with Washington State, meaning he was not allowed to gamble on college football. Mateer's Venmo activity has since been removed or made private. This is according to a report with CBS.
Is this not college football's worst nightmare?
I think it's sports' worst nightmare. I mean, this we knew when it became, you know, legal to have the apps, and we, you know, we got it here in Tennessee, and a lot of states have the apps and everything, that it was going to be, you know, there were going to be more of these stories coming out. And we've seen players in the NFL, we've seen players with the Titans get popped for it.
We have. And I what's the fine line of thinking, all right, I can tell you all day in the face, Chase, can't gamble. But the lure, I mean, it was like, oh, it's there. I mean, it's on your phone.
Right.
Go to the parking lot and do it on your phone. And so it's just something that I think it's going to be, I think every meeting on a college football campus to this thing, don't gamble. But man, it's easier said than done.
Pete Thamel is all over this. He says, have been told to expect a statement from John Mateer this afternoon that denies any involvement in gambling. He's at Oklahoma football practice and is expected to put something out in the near future. He said more on this, with OU officials vetting John Mateer and his Venmos that reference sports gambling, there's a long way to go and see if he did anything wrong. Hypothetically, a case that involves a student-athlete wagering on his or her own sport would unfold this way, per the NCAA rules. He goes on to say, in a hypothetical case, any eligibility ruling the NCAA would come as part of the reinstatement process. Here's the rule. If a student-athlete wagers on their own sport at another school, education on sports wagering rules and prevention will be required as a condition of reinstatement, and the loss of 50% of one season of eligibility will be considered.
Yeah. So
if they discover anything,
yeah,
he's going to sit out at least half the year. Which, with a team like Oklahoma that is already, you know, people are looking at their coach and thinking, he might not be the guy, and, you know, they may not be a good team. You lose your quarterback, that's an issue.
Thank you. Dale texts in and says, did the bets he placed, at least did he win? God, you guys are terrible.
That's a great question.
Real quick, though, this is nothing new. I sent this to the group text last night that in 1963, Paul Hornung and Alex Karras from the NFL – a major scandal erupted, and Paul Hornung and six other stars suspended from football indefinitely in April of 1963 by Commissioner Pete Rozelle for betting on NFL games and associating with undesirable persons. Paul Hornung went out and said, I did this. They were suspended for an entire year. So to think this is just happening now, no, it's been happening for 50, 60, 70 years, at least.
Okay, so if – right, it has, and we all know the Pete Rose scandal. I mean, Pete Rose is not in the Hall of Fame because he was banned from baseball.
Correct.
For betting on baseball,
yeah,
including games that he played in. And so, you know, now, again, there's no evidence to say that he threw games, but everybody's always going to say, well, what if? I mean, now, if he wasn't the hit king, I think you could question a lot more. But, you know, so that really put it in everybody's mind. With that was such a big scandal.
Yeah.
So now you have this in prominent college football. I mean, the SEC can, you know, they're going to step in at some point. I mean, the NCAA is doing their thing right now, which will take 5 years. Yeah. So,
how many college football coaches had a meeting today and said, promise me to their star players, promise me you're not doing – promise me you're not doing this.
134 in Division One,
roughly,
like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I would say around that.
Yeah. So, you know, we've talked about this. Like, for me, calling MTSU football games, I can't gamble.
Yeah.
I can't because I'm considered an insider even though I don't know anything. But I can't do that. I love calling MTSU football games. I'm not going to screw that up. So with me and having spotlight on just a small idiot like myself, I'm not doing that. I couldn't imagine the pressure on these kids to like, hey, man, because, again, it's right there on – I could place a bet within 2 minutes, but I'm not going to do that. But for these guys, I just –
well, and the
tough.
Problem is they think, oh, I won't get caught. They don't realize that it's pretty easy to trace an IP address. That was what happened to it was the Titans offense.
Petit Frere.
Yeah,
I was going to ask you, how'd that happen?
Because he was on the Wi-Fi, I guess, or the they could, you know, track his phone of where he was, and so he was in the facility. He wasn't betting on the NFL. I think it was a college football bet, but he was in the facility.
Yeah,
and that's from what I understand, like if you're an NFL team employee, like you can't even really walk in a casino. Like when you go to Vegas, I mean, in season, I think off season you can, but.
Well, we had the great Coach Fisher tell us that, remember he said that him and like Mike Shanahan went to a golf tournament.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. And he
in
had
Vegas.
To, yep.
And NFL's like, why are you golfing here? And he's like, yeah. Well, we're in a golf tournament. We're
right.
Not. And they're like,
yeah.
No, it's, yeah. It's a pretty good story.
Yeah. So, I mean, they are. Kudos to the NFL because they take it seriously, and I would assume the NCAA and the SEC and Oklahoma, they're all going to take it seriously too. But I would imagine today, right before practice, you heard a lot of, men, I know it's real easy to pull up a draft duel or a Fan Kings or whatever it's called on your cell phone. That's Bill Belichick probably saying that.
Yeah, right.
But you know, we don't bet on football. You know, I wouldn't bet on you guys right now anyway. Yeah, you know, you'll get in trouble if you bet on football.
I'm asked, what could I bet on if I wanted to? I think I can bet on horse racing NASCAR.
So you can't even bet on the NFL?
Nothing. Anything that's tied to the NCAA.
Well, how is the NFL tied to the NCAA?
Where did Cam Ward go to college?
Okay.
Played in the NCAA. He's tied to the NCAA. You're tied to college football.
But he's not an active player.
But you're still from that where. I mean, you're still considered in part of that. Can't do it. So I can do horse racing.
I think that's a little bit of a stretch. But
I can do horse racing and car racing because there's not a funnel or a farm league.
That's actually not true.
Set up.
Because there are numerous, including a former MTSU football player, that are on pit crews. So how is that not tied to the NCAA?
I don't know.
I'm just using their logic against them.
I can bet on that.
No, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, like it's like they're saying that you can't bet on an NFL game that has no bearing on college football now. But you can bet on NASCAR, even though, you know, see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like it just
seeing
NCAA making stuff up as they go.
Well, I think it's from. And I'm not going to question it. If you can't do it, I'm like, all right, I'm going to do it.
Yeah, I mean.
Plus, I'm not in debt.
Sure.
I know people very close to me who are in a lot of debt because of sports gambling, and they're not finding a way out. So I think it needs to be talked about maybe a little bit more about here's what happens when you go a little deep into that. And, you know, we all know that. Maybe there should be examples shown to you that here's what can happen.
I always go back to the Herm Edwards, you know, with the rookie symposium, you know, one car, one house, one girlfriend, you know, you don't need the big shiny watch. Like, you take care of your money. And that kind of thing would matter so much now.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
What did Skoronski tell us? I asked him after we had him on. I said, do you go home? Do you watch NFL Network? And he's like, no, man, I just – go straight home, get something to eat, watch TV, go to bed.
Yep.
I'm like, wish I had that advice when I was 24. God. Terrible.
615-737-1019. 1025 is our phone and text line, driven by WilsonCountyHoney.com. Michael and Madison says 200-plus head coaches all around the country today collectively said at meetings, I can't believe I have to say this, but do not effing gamble.
It's a good way to get it out there.
Like, I would be curious if the coach had that conversation with his team today.
They've had it.
Yeah.
They've had it. Usually it's somebody, a law enforcement guy comes in and talks to him.
Yeah.
I'm not happening up there, but in most cases they come in and say, here's what you can and cannot do. It just, if you're questioning it, just don't do it. Just don't do it and get away from it. Now, this is all alleged, because if he actually put it on his Venmo account that this is for gambling, and there was another one on there he put for a Mexican soccer league or something crazy. There's no way he bet on that. But, I mean, you can go on that app, right? You can bet on anything in the world.
Yeah.
Anything.
You can. It's that easy. Coming up next, we did this yesterday with the 1936 college football season. Now we're going to ask ChatGPT to simulate the college football playoff in 1998, in which the Tennessee Volunteers went undefeated and won the national championship. Can they do it again, hypothetically? We'll talk about that next. Have a little fun. Here on Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel, 1025, the game.
Security, and his football team has won a national championship. And it's fun to see. And I congratulate him. Bobby Bowden, of course, is a longtime legend. And he, too, will congratulate Phil Fulmer. Because the Tennessee Volunteers felt they might very well be a team of destiny. They talked about it quietly, discussed it with the kind of respect that you had to have.
How about that, Joe? Does that take you back?
I love it because it's Keith Jackson, and I was actually at that game.
Were you?
Fiesta Bowl, January 4th, 1999. Yep.
I was watching at my grandmother's house, and I remember one of my grandmother's good friends had a shirt that said, Tennessee, the only team I hate more than Notre Dame, or something like that. He was going for Florida State. Did not happen that night.
Nope.
But having a hypothetical, we had this yesterday with the 1936 season, because that was the year of the first AP poll. We decided to ask ChatGPT about the 1998 season and using the college football playoff rules. Now, in real life, Tennessee went, what was it, 14-0?
They 13-0? 14-0. You're right.
And won the first BCS national championship against Florida State. So this is what ChatGPT came up with. The top 12 seeds. Thank you, Dr. Crane. Tennessee was the number one overall seed, 12-0 in the SEC. Going into the playoff, Florida State, the ACC champion, at 11-1. Who'd they lose to?
Who was that?
Florida State.
Did they lose to? God, I knew you'd do this to me. Keep talking. I'll figure it out.
The three seed, Kansas State, the Big 12 North champion, but they lost in the Big 12 title game, but they still got in there. Ohio State won the Big 10 at 10-1. UCLA won the Pac 10 at 10-1. Arizona at 11-1 was the Pac 10 runner up. Florida at 9-2, Georgia Tech at 10-2, Texas A&M, the Big 12 champion at 11-2, Wisconsin at 10-1, Tulane won the WAC at 11-0, and then Air Force at 11-1. It's the top 12 seeds.
FSU lost to NC State that year,
oh, wow.
Game 2 in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Your first round byes were Tennessee, Florida State, Kansas State, Ohio State. Round 1. The 12 seed Air Force at UCLA. UCLA's offense with Cade McNown is too much for Air Force triple option. UCLA wins 45-21.
Okay, all right.
The 11 seed Tulane at Arizona.
Woo!
Sean King at Tulane?
He was.
Tulane's Sean King makes it fun early, but Arizona's Desert Swarm defense controls late. Arizona wins 34-24.
Off of that season, Tommy Bowden took the Clemson job in 99 because they were 12-0.
The 10 seed Wisconsin heads to the swamp to take on Florida. Ron Dane runs wild early, but Doug Johnson and Florida's wide receiver corps break it open. The winner, Florida, 31-20.
Doug Johnson. Oh, man.
A 9-8 matchup, Texas A&M at Georgia Tech. It was a close one. George Hamilton of Georgia Tech edges A&M in a thriller. Georgia Tech wins 27-24 in overtime.
I think the quarterback of A&M was Brandon Stewart, who was at Knoxville with Peyton and left because Peyton beat him out of the job.
Huh, interesting. All right, we move to the second round, the quarterfinals, which will be played at the Sugar Bowl. This is the Sugar Bowl. Georgia Tech against Tennessee.
Uh-oh.
T. Martin, Peerless Price, and Jamal Lewis overpower Georgia Tech. Tennessee wins going away 38-17.
Pretty accurate.
And then, in the Orange Bowl, Florida State.
Oh, wow.
Third meeting of the year, they split. This says they split 1-1.
They might have played in the bowl game.
Yeah, could have. FSU's defense shuts down Florida late. Florida State wins 27-20.
I'm curious now about that.
Well, keep in mind, this is a reenactment. So, I mean,
yeah,
it might not be completely right. Arizona against Kansas State in the Fiesta Bowl. Chris McAllister and Arizona's defense slow Michael Bishop, but K-State gets it late, wins 24-21.
Michael Bishop was a force in 98 in college. That's a good team.
Then the 5-4 matchup at the Rose Bowl, UCLA against Ohio State. Ohio State's David Boston dominates the UCLA secondary. Ohio State wins 31-24.
Boston was a beast.
We move to the semifinals. A familiar matchup in the real world. Ohio State against Tennessee. Ohio State actually matches up well, and it's close until the fourth, but then Jamal Lewis seals it. Tennessee wins 28-24.
Well, okay. All right.
To advance to the national championship. Kansas State takes on Florida State. Peter Warrick explodes for 150 yards receiving as Florida State beats K-State 30-21 to set up once again, Tennessee against Florida State in the national title game. It doesn't tell me where this is, where it would have put the national title game.
But all right.
Where was it?
Fiesta Bowl.
Yeah. Yep. Tennessee against Florida State. The real-life 98 Fiesta Bowl matchup happens anyway, but now both teams have playoff battle scars. Tennessee's defense forces key turnovers, and Peerless Price's long touchdown catch seals it. The Vols win 31-21 to win the national championship and go 14-0.
So nothing really earth-shattering.
Nope.
So does ChatGPT think that Tennessee absolutely, because they won on the field, so
yeah,
they back up the fact that Tennessee
it does
won.
Say, if you want, I can run a what-if simulation with Kansas State avoiding their Big 12 title game collapse, which could change the bracket entirely. That might produce a very different champ. Would you like me to run that alternate playoff?
Then it says, also, I can come at late at night and kill you because I'm ChatGPT. Sure, run it. Why not?
All right.
That was an interesting year because Tennessee had to have four things go in their favor to get there, and they all happened.
So this has Kansas State as the number one seed. Tennessee is the two, but both went 12-0. First round matchups, Air Force at UCLA. UCLA wins 41-20. Tulane at Arizona. Arizona wins 34-21. Texas A&M at Florida. Florida wins 35-17. Wisconsin at Georgia Tech. Wisconsin wins 27-20. Quarterfinals, Wisconsin falls to Kansas State 38-24. Tennessee beats Florida 27-23. Arizona loses to Florida State 31-17. Ohio State beats UCLA 30-21. Kansas State in the semifinals beats Ohio State 28-24. Tennessee beats Florida State in the semifinal 31-27. And in the national championship, Tennessee beats Kansas State 28-24.
All right. Either way you look at it, Tennessee wins the national championship.
So there you go.
Good for them.
Fun with ChatGPT.
By the way, Tennessee did go 13-0. I thought they played 14. They only played 11 games that year. And then they were
So here's the national title game breakdown that they do. K-State jumps to a 14-0 lead with Bishop hitting Darnell McDonald deep. Tennessee responds with Jamal Lewis pounding the ball and Peerless Price making plays. In the fourth, Al Wilson forces a fumble that Tennessee turns into a winning touchdown. And yeah. I could see all of that happening.
All happened. it's funny, the 98 schedule for Tennessee, they opened at Syracuse. Then they had a week off. Then they played Florida, beat them that huge game up there. Then they had at Auburn, at Georgia, and Alabama, and they rolled through that. They pounded Georgia and Athens, and then for those who remember, Alabama was hanging tough, and then Perilous Price ran a kickoff back for a touchdown, opened the game up, and then the rest is history. God, that's 1998.
Who was Alabama's coach in 98?
That would have been Mike Dubose.
Dubose.
I think Stallings left after 96 or 97 right in there and was gone. So that was a special year, man. And that's also the Clint Sterner year when he dropped the ball on the ground.
Oh, yeah. Like they very well could have lost to Arkansas.
Yep.
Probably they had the field goal against Florida to beat Florida.
Yep. God, that's another lifetime ago, man.
I know. Feels like 98. So
it does. You want to feel old? I heard listen to Jake's show today talking about high school seniors, about John Gruden not knowing who he was because Gruden won the Super Bowl in 02 at Tampa Bay. He says, you know, high school seniors now were born in 2007, 2008. And I was like, Jake, I'm going to turn your show off. I can't. That's tough, man. But he's right.
If I missed that part, I would have walked in and be like, Jake, we need to talk.
Yeah, right, Jake? Come on, man.
Come on now. 615-737-1025. Coming up next, Tim Hasselbeck will join us. We'll get his thoughts on Cam Ward's first preseason game, practices, and so much more. Later today on 94.9 The Fan, the Nashville Sounds will take on Durham, the first pitch at 5:35. Coverage also available in the Game Nashville app and at thegamenashville.com. Sounds Baseball, presented by Twin Peaks and Family Leisure. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game. This week's Nashville's Best Deal is Fat Bottom Brewing Company. Join Fat Bottom this Saturday for their Lucky 13 Anniversary Party at 844th Avenue North in Nashville. It's a full day of casino-themed fun. Live tattoos from Black 13, face painting, balloon art game, and of course, ice cold beer. Get a $100 gift card, half off while supplies last, by going to thegamenashville.com/deals. Plus, don't miss their Lucky 13 anniversary party this Saturday at Fat Bottom Brewing Company. Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game here on this Tuesday, and every Tuesday in around now, we talk to Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, and of course, the head coach at Innsworth High School. Coach, how you doing?
I'm doing great. How you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic. Let's just start it with this. Cam Ward makes his preseason debut, two series. He does lead a touchdown drive in the second series that's capped off by a Tony Pollard run. I thought there was some good, there were some bad, there were some mid, as he likes to say. What did you make of his performance?
Yeah, I think it was fine. You know, I think, I don't know, I get always, you know, this time of year of the overreaction to preseason stuff. And you know, I think, you know, early on, you know, I think I learned that, you know, preseason games don't count, but they matter. But then, you know, not making them matter so much, right? Like when I was in Washington, I remember, you know, there was a game played in Japan, and like just at the time, you know, the Washington offense was amazing. And then all of a sudden you get to the season and it's like, we couldn't move the ball against anybody. And you think, well, like what happened? And like, well, part of what happened is it was just the preseason, which is a very different preparation. It's a very different sample size. So like, I think it was fine. I don't think it was amazing. I don't think it was terrible or mid or any of those things. I think it was just like, okay, couple series and yeah, okay, like hopefully we learn some things, not just from his reps, but from, meaning Cam Ward's reps, but like everyone else's reps as well, and that there's growth. So I think I would kind of characterize it that way. So I don't want to discount, Chase, that it wasn't the Anthony Richardson, hey, you had no idea that you were hot, you got blasted and busted up your finger. It's obviously way better than that. But, you know, I don't think we need to name him Mr. August yet either.
you kind of mentioned something there. Like, how when you were playing, and even, you know, your brother probably, you've talked about this with him, in practice and training camp, in these preseason games, I would assume there are going to be things you're going to try a little bit differently because you know it doesn't count and you're trying to get better and you're trying to learn than you would in a regular game. Is that a true statement?
I think it depends on who you are. I think if you're a starter or you're somebody that's planning on being a starter and you have a solid position, I think you can approach it that way, yes. I think if you're a guy that is, you know, trying to prove your worth to the team and make the roster, then no, you don't do that. So, you know, but I think it's just a very different perspective, you know, depending on kind of what the expectation is for you that season and kind of what your standing is on the team. So for a young quarterback, yeah, like, all right, we call this pass concept, and okay, like, that's a throw that I think I can make. I'm going to try to make that throw. It didn't work out. Like, okay, like, you know, you're not going to end up on the waiver wire, you know, the following week. Whereas, you know, for some players, like, you do if you try to go outside of what you've been coached to do to make a play.
Talking to Tim Hasselbeck on the Chase and Big Joe Show. Tim, you ready for these great questions I got for you?
I am.
Well, good.
I appreciate you emailing them to me first.
You are so welcome, my friend. All right, in the there's only three preseason games. One's gone. There's only two left. Do you need to see Cam Ward play an entire game or no?
Not an entire game, but I do think there's an element of playing one series in the second half after a halftime. Just like, you know, part of it is just like the mechanics and the routine of it. And, you know, it may sound, you know, somewhat silly, like, well, it's just halftime. Like, what's the big deal? But, you know, for a quarterback, there is an element of going through your routine. You know, you play a half, you know, who knows how the half ends? Does it end in a 2-minute drive? Does the other team have the ball? Like, you don't know what it is. You go into halftime. Okay. Like, you know, what is that routine like? And then are you now getting the football back to start the second half, or are you waiting till the defense gets off the field to have another drive? And so, you know, not just for the quarterback, but like the entire offense as a unit to say, all right, whatever the real time is, that's, yeah, hey, it ends up being 23 minutes, 27 minutes, 34 minutes between the last time that you were out there on the field. Like, I do think there's an element of that that I think it was important for players to go through.
There was a time at Cam, early in camp, they asked him why he's doing certain things, and he said, these are things I'd never do in a game. I hate that when they say, Tim, it's like, do some things in the preseason you wouldn't do in the game. I just find that dumb.
Yeah. Yeah, I think there's a difference between, like, hey, I know I would never do this, to this is a point of emphasis that we're working on today. So, like, take this as an example. If you say, look, we need to find more explosives on offense, okay? And so one of the things that we're going to do to find more explosives is, look, we're going to give guys a chance to make a play on the football down the field. And some of them we realize maybe some contested catches, but we got to find out if our guy can go up and make a play over their guy. And so, all right, in the quarterback meeting room, be like, look, here's the deal. Like, if we call double go and we got a guy out there, like, let's give him a chance. Let's keep it in bounds. Let's let him get his hands on it. Like, whatever it is. Like, that's the coaching point. That's the point of emphasis today. Okay. Well, like, well, I'm going to do that. That doesn't mean you're definitely making that throw in a game,
right,
or in every scenario, but it is something to say that, like, all right, we're trying to see if we're growing as a team. And so, you know, that's not something you would never do in a game, but it's something that you may not always do in a game. And so, Joe, I do think that there's a – you never should do something that you would never do in a game.
Right. No, right? I agree with that.
Maybe that's a little semantics in terms of how he described it. But yeah, the things you never do in a game is fumble the football. You know?
Right.
Like, those are things you want to never do.
Would you come out Friday night if you're Cam Ward and kind of run a hurry up? Because, look, I know he can hand the ball off, but I'd like, mm-hmm, to see how he can run an offense up-tempo. Would you be okay with that?
Yeah, here's what I think happens in these preseason games. You know, we've eliminated one, and so, you know, you just don't get as many opportunities, and so you don't know the situations that are going to arise. And I think most coaches in the NFL would tell you that, like, look, it's about third down and red zone. It's about situational football. You know, can you end a game, you know, with the ball in your hands? Things like that. And, you know, in a preseason game where guys are going to play a couple series or maybe not play into the second half, well, A, you don't know what situations you're going to get, and then B, you don't know who the guys are that are going to get the situation. So, you know, I do believe that, you know, in practice, it's why, you know, so many teams have gone to these joint practices, is because you can plan, all right, hey, here's what we're going to do today. We're going to look, we're gonna do, you know, some type of up-tempo offense, or we're gonna work on a end of the half 2-minute drive, or an end of the game 2-minute drive, or we're gonna work on, you know, even more you know, detailed situations like a mayday field goal at the end of the game or half. So, yeah, I think all of those, you know, like I'm up for all of those situations because those win and lose you football games.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us here on the Chasing Big Joe show. So the Titans released Tim Boyle. They signed Trevor Siemian. They now have two backups on the team, or presumed backups that are fighting for that spot that have connections mm-hmm. with Brian Callahan. How important is that, and does the backup quarterback sometimes play the role of an additional coach when it comes to helping the starter? Because they're standing there, they're getting the calls just like the starter mm-hmm. is. They're watching on the sidelines. They might see things that the guy in the game doesn't see. So how important is it to have, you know, one or two of those guys that truly understand all the terminology that Brian's throwing at them?
Yeah, I think that they're very important, but I don't. And I think sometimes, Chase, it can be as a coach. And, like, you take Trevor Siemian as an example. He's a really smart guy, and he's been a starter. And so I think that there's valuable wisdom that he has that can be helpful to a young quarterback. So I think that there's certainly some of that. Now, the guy has to, you know, be able to, you know, give, you know, I guess kind of impart his wisdom in a good way to, you know, a young guy that's, you know, had a lot of success at a different level. And you got to make sure that he's receptive to that guy's, you know, teaching or pointers or whatever, mentorship, whatever it may be. I do think that that is important for a young quarterback because, you know, sometimes it's the conversation over lunch where, you know, something sinks in. It's not necessarily the, you know, the comment in a meeting room, you know, as the quarterback coach is trying to coach everybody. So sometimes I think it's that. And then I think one of the biggest areas is as translator. And I saw this early on in my career when Donovan McNabb was a starter and Coy Detmer was one of the backups. And Pat Shurmur, I think, oftentimes used Coy Detmer as the messenger, as the translator of something that he wanted to get across. And it was because Donovan really trusted Coy. And so it was just an easy way to be like, look, I'm saying this, but I don't know that he's getting, like, this is what we need him to do. Can you help get that done? And so I think that it's important to have a guy that just even embraces the role of saying, look, that's part of my job on this team is yes, go in and play well if someone gets hurt, but two, be the messenger to this young quarterback.
We'll have more with Tim Hasselbeck, Innsworth football coach and ESPN NFL analyst, coming up next here on Chasing Big Joe, presented by the Omni Nashville Hotel. 102.5 The Game. Chasing Big Joe, 102.5 The Game, here on this Tuesday, continuing our conversation with Tim Hasselbeck, Innsworth's fine football coach and ESPN NFL analyst. How are the Tigers looking?
Yeah, we're going to find out on August 22nd. Still have the tickets for Elvis, Big Joe, and you, Chase, left at will call. We'll find out. You know, it's that time of year where I think we're must having all these coaches, right? Where you school starts, kids are distracted, and you're like, man, we got a lot. We got to get figured out before the season starts.
Well, it's good. I got to go Thursday night and speak to the Gallatin High School football team. Did they put one on you last Friday?
We scrimmaged them. You know what? It was and I mean this. So like, obviously, we have some fun and joke on here. Look, I think that, you know, the experience of kids competing in high school football, I think should always be a positive one. And yes. So we've scrimmaged Gallatin the last couple of years. So last year and this year, and like, to me, it's a good environment where kids are competing, but it's respectful. You know, it's not the 7-on-7 culture of guys taunting and doing that type of stuff. And so it was good work for our football team, and I hope it was for them as well.
Tim, we started this talking about Cam Ward and, you know, don't overreact. But everybody overreacted about Shedeur Sanders mm-hmm. and what he did.
Did he play this week?
Yeah, he did. He sure did. Oh, okay. A few other guys did too. But, you know, I've heard Cleveland's putting a statue up and retiring the jersey and all that stuff. But, I mean, did he need that? Not that he has any issue with confidence, But was that good for him because of everything that's happened since the draft?
Here's why. I think it was good for him because he was a late-round pick and he was buried on the depth chart. And now he got to start a preseason game, and he played well. And so now, like, just take Shedeur Sanders out of it and, you know, make it somebody else. Like, what would happen is you go, oh, like, maybe there's some potential here for this guy. Like, think about what happened with Russell Wilson. They had Matt Flynn. They drafted a guy not as late. I think Russ was third, fourth round. And all of a sudden, you know, he plays in a preseason game, and they're like, wait a minute, this guy can play. Like, this is pretty good. Like, we thought he could play, but you don't know until a guy gets out there. And so when he does, you say, maybe one day this guy could be the starting quarterback here. Like, that's why I think it's a huge deal for Cleveland.
Do you think he helped his cause?
Yeah, I mean, listen, he's got guys in front of him that are injured. So that right off the bat in every scenario gives you an opportunity, and then he played well. And so really what happens, you know, beyond that, you know, you can start to be debated in terms of, all right, well, will there now be pressure to play him, you know, from ownership? Will there now be pressure to play him because of, you know, the fans and how everything else is going? So, you know, I think that those, you know, I don't know. I still think it's relatively early, but if he stacks another preseason game like that and continues to get a lot of work, then I could see them going with him. When if there would have been no injuries that happened, I think I could have seen them cutting him. Like, that's a huge swing.
Ah, you're exactly right. Tim Hasselbeck's on the Jason McJoe Show. Tim, I'm fascinated by this question. Who should Cam Ward's best friend be on the Titans team right now? Some have said Tony Pollard. Some have said Calvin Ridley. Some have said, you know, J.C. Latham. Who do you think his best friend should be kind of on and off the field as they go forward together?
Well, I can't say I know everybody's off-the-field habit, so I would be careful. I always think, like, for a quarterback, it's the guys up front. It's fitting in with the group up front. Receivers are great, and you need to have a good relationship with them, but – you know, if you're on the same, everything starts up front,
right?
With protection and communication and getting the runs. And, like, you know, especially in this age now of, you know, RPOs, like, you can see it now, especially on Saturdays. Like, go watch when, you know, a quarterback spits the ball out to the perimeter on a run pass option, but the offensive line thought that they had a nice look in the run game, you know?
Yeah.
Like, there's a lot of, like, hey, man, what are you doing, right? So, like, but I think if everyone is on kind of, I guess, you know, understanding and kind of in lockstep up front, then I think all the other stuff will work itself out, like with receivers, running backs, tight ends, all of that stuff.
How important is it before that first game in Denver that those five guys up front spend a lot of time together on the field? Because right now they have spent zero time together.
Yeah, I do think it's important. You know, I was actually just talking, you know, so our defensive line coach here at Ensworth is Leroy Harris. So you guys probably remember.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, drafted by the Titans, played offensive guard for the Titans. And, you know, one of the things we kind of were just talking to our offensive line about, because he's the defensive line coach, was just like communicating, you know. And one of the things Matthew, you know, my brother Matthew, who was the quarterback at the Titans at the time Leroy was playing for the Titans, was, he said, he's like, you know, what's funny is Leroy never talked. Like, if you were in the locker room, like, he didn't talk to anybody. Like, he was so quiet. But, like, then you get in the game or you'd be at practice and, like he and Michael Roos, like they couldn't stop talking. Like, that's all they did was talk and communicate, and we're on the same page, right? And so, yeah, it's important at every level that the guys up front are communicating. They know what each other is planning, and when I say, you know, hey, let's be thick through this, like, what does that mean? Or hey, like all of that stuff, like, it's their own little language that they take over. So it is important to have time on task with one another.
Do your kids really grasp and appreciate the experience that they're getting with you and your brother and Leroy and, you know, guys that played in the NFL at such a high level. I mean, that's really, really cool.
Hey, and Grant Williams and Ben Jones. I'm like,
Ben Jones, yeah.
Part of me, like, I want to be like, every now and then I'm tempted to like pull some of our linemen over and be like, hey, listen, next time you like drive by Nissan Stadium and you see like a, you know, Empire State Building size mural of Ben Jones, like, you just realize, you know, that we didn't just grab some guy off the street to help coach here, right? So, but hey, I could feel that way about like someone like Ben, but I think the beauty of Ben or Leroy or Grant or any of the guys that we have here is that, like, they don't look at it that way, you know? Like, they come in it with, like, you guys have, like, you've been around Ben to see him. Like, just there's no ego in it for them. They just love the idea that they're maybe helping somebody grow, develop, you know, get a little bit better at something that they're working hard at.
Tim, your father played a long time in the National Football League. Was there a teammate of your dad's that you were just mesmerized by?
Yeah, so for us, it was Mark Bavaro. Mark Bavaro, ooh, my dad's last year was with the Giants, and Mark Bavaro got drafted, and Parcells called my dad and was like, look, I need you to play one more year. And my dad was like, look, man, I'm beat up. I'm not going to do it. And he's like, just trust me. You're going to love this guy. I need you to basically be his big brother. And so they end up drafting Mark Bavaro, and he would he stayed with us at our house in New Jersey,
wow,
you know, that year. He was just a single guy, had been drafted. And I just remember this was back when like the real fancy thing was like Indiglo on your watch. You know, you press that button,
yeah,
and it lights up. He had an Indiglo watch. So like, I actually thought he was cool because he had that. You know, it was like, hey, Mr. Bavaro has got the Indiglo watch. Like that, not because he was like carrying Ronnie Lott down the field. It was because of that.
Not Howie Long. I thought Howie Long, you might have gone there.
Yeah, I mean, like, listen, there were a lot of guys, especially being on that Raiders team, that won Super Bowl 18, Marcus Allen, Lyle Alzado, you know, guys like that. But now for us, maybe because we were a little bit older, Mark Bavaro was the guy.
I love it.
You know, it was always weird for us. Like, you know, it's even weird for me to say Mark Bavaro. Like, I always have to say, like, Mr. Grogan, you know, Mr. Bavaro. It was just, you know, he never called them by their first names.
Great stuff as always, Tim. We will talk to you next week.
All right, sounds good. I'm going to make the kids call Ben Mr. Jones.
Yeah.
Mr. Harris, Leroy.
There
That's
you
how
go.
They have to address him at practice. All right, fellas. See ya.
So, yeah, Tim Hasselbeck joining us here on the program. He's the head coach at Innsworth and also ESPN NFL analyst, and always enjoy talking to him. Real quick, I just saw this on Twitter, and you're going to absolutely love this.
Uh-oh.
Week 3 of the NFL season on CBS will be, they'll be celebrating the 50th anniversary of the NFL today. They will do a throwback theme, including Brent Musburger on set.
Love it.
As the host. And they're going to have the old set and the theme and all that stuff. So you are looking live.
Yes.
Week 3 of the NFL.
I think he's the only one left. I think Irv Cross is gone, Phyllis George is gone, and Jimmy the Greek
yeah.
is gone.
Yeah. So he'll be with the current analyst.
I love it.
Yeah, so that'll be really cool to have that. Just thought you would appreciate
that.
Thank you. We'll have much more coming in hour number two, including we'll reset how the Titans did today at joint practices with the Atlanta Falcons. It's Chase and Big Joe, 102.5 The Game.